Tape recorded message number TL-475. Otis Q. Sellers, Bible Teacher. I greet you in the faith and fellowship of our great God and Savior, the Lord Jesus Christ, whose we are, whom we love, and whom we serve. Take your Bibles and turn with me to 2 Samuel chapter 15. Our actual study today will begin with verse 29, but I want to go back and review beginning with about verse 13 of the chapter. You will remember that the trumpet, which was to be the signal that Absalom reigned in Hebron, had been sounded, and the response of the people to this had begun. A messenger came to David saying, "The hearts of the men of Israel are after Absalom." Now, the narrative is very concise here, it's very compact, and we cannot tell whether or not this was the first announcement to David of the real intentions of Absalom. But it is very certain that David was entirely unprepared to meet the sudden revolt. For the first news of it all but overwhelmed him. And little wonder, there came on him three calamities in one. First, there was the calamity that the great bulk of the people had revolted against him, and were now hastening to drive him from the throne and very probably to put him to death. That must have been a terrible shock. And suddenly there was the appalling discovery of the hypocrisy and the heartless cruelty of his favorite son and his popular son, the most crushing thing that could be to a tender heart. And third, there was the discovery that the hearts of the people were with Absalom. That David had lost what he most prized and desired to possess, the intense affection that he had for the people of Israel, now met with no response. Their love and their confidence was given to a usurper. Fancy an old man, perhaps in bad health, suddenly confronted with this threefold dreadful calamity. Who can wonder that for a time he is just paralyzed and can't make a move, and he bends before the storm? Now it seems to have appeared to David that the only course that he could follow, feasible course he could follow, was to flee from Jerusalem. Both policy and humanity seemed to dictate this. He considered himself unable to defend the city with any hope of success against the attack by such a force as Absalom could muster. And he was unwilling to expose the people of Jerusalem to be smitten with the sword. Now, whether he was really this helpless or not, we cannot say. We would be disposed to think that his first duty was to stay where he was and defend his capital. He was there as God's reigning king, anointed by him, and would not God be with him, defending the place where God had set his name, and the tabernacle in which he was pleased to dwell? Well, it's not possible for us to say, because we do not know the circumstances to decide whether his flight was just simply what he felt was an absolute necessity, or just the fruit of a sudden panic, of a heart that was paralyzed and just could not gird itself for the right action. His advisors had no other advice to offer. Any course that they recommended, any course that recommended itself to him, they were ready to take. If this did not help to throw light on his difficulties, it must at least have soothed his heart. His friends were not all forsaking him. Amid the faithless, a few were found faithful. And, of course, friends in such a need are friends indeed. And yet, on leaving Jerusalem, David at once turned eastward into that wilderness country between Jerusalem and Jericho, with probably in mind that he would cross the Jordan so as to have that river with its deep valley between himself and the rebels. The first halt, or rather the first place he stopped to gather together his followers, though it's called a place that is far off, is more suitably rendered in the Revised Version as Bethmerhak, and the margin the far house. Probably it was the last house on this side of the Brook Kedron. Here, outside of the walls of the city, some hasty arrangements were made before the flight was begun in earnest. Now, first we're told here that he was accompanied by all his household, with the exception of 10 concubines who were left to keep the house. We would just like to forget about this feature of his house from which so much mischief had come. But to the end of the day, David never deviated in that respect from the barbarous policy of all Eastern kings. The very mention of his household shows how embarrassed he must have been with so many helpless appendages and how slow his flight. And his household were not the only women and children accompany. For the little ones of the Gittites we have seen are mentioned there in verse 22. And we may conceive how the unconcealed terror and excitement of these helpless beings must have distressed him, as their feeble powers or walking must have been held back the fighting part of his attendants. When one thinks of this, one sees more clearly the excellence of the advice afterwards given by Ahithophel to pursue him without loss of time with 12,000 men, to destroy his person at once. In that case, Absalom must have overtaken him long before he reached the Jordan and found him quite unable to withstand his ferocious troops. And next we find mention of the forces that remained to the faithful to the king in the crisis of his misfortunes. You remember their strange names, the Pelethites, the Cherethites, and the Gittites were the chief of those. Now the Pelethites and the Cherethites are supposed to have been representatives of the band of followers that David commanded when he was hiding from Saul in the wilderness. And the Gittites appear to have been a body of refugees from Gath driven away by the tyranny of the Philistines, men who had thrown themselves on the protection of David and had been well treated by him. The interview between David and Ittai was most creditable to the feelings of the fugitive king. Ittai was a stranger who had but lately come to Jerusalem, and he was not attached to David personally. It would be much safer for him to return to the city and offer to the reigning king the services which David could no longer reward. But the generous proposal of David was rejected with real nobility on the part of Ittai. He had probably been received with kindness by David when he first came to Jerusalem, the king remembering well when he himself was in like predicament. Having had no experience of adversity myself, he says, I know, having had experience with adversity, I know how to succor those, to help those who are in the same state. So Ittai's heart was won to David then. He had made up his mind, like Ruth the Moabitess, with reverence to Naomi, that wherever David was, in life or in death, there also he should be. How affecting must it have been to David to receive such an assurance from a stranger? His own son Absalom, that he had just overloaded with every kind of affection, undeserved kindness was conspiring against him, while this stranger, who owed him nothing in comparison, was risking everything in his cause. As the scripture says, there is a friend that sticketh closer than a brother. And here was a newfound friend of David who was sticking certainly much closer than his own son Absalom. And then next it mentions those with David, Zadok and Abiathar, the priests. They're carrying the Ark of God. Now, the very fact that this sacred symbol, that would have given David's cause a manifestly divine character in the eyes of all good men. Its absence from Absalom would have equally suggested the absence of Israel's God. But David probably remembered how ill it had fared with Israel in the days of Eli and his sons when the ark was carried into battle. Moreover, when the ark had been placed on Mount Zion, God had said, "This is my rest, here will I dwell." And so even in this extraordinary emergency, David would not disturb that arrangement. He said to Zadok, "Carry back the ark of God into the city. If I shall find favor in the eyes of the Lord, he shall bring me again, and show me both it, the ark that is, and his habitation. But if he thus say, 'I have no delight in thee,' behold, here am I, let him do to me what seemeth good to him." In spite of the calamities that fell upon him from the hand of God, David was entirely submissive. These words show how much God was in David's mind in connection with the events that took place on that day of his great humiliation when he had to flee from Jerusalem. So if he was to be restored, he was not going to be restored by taking the ark out of its place that God had set for it and said, "This is the place where I stop, the place of my rest." He was going to be delivered entirely by God. Now, that is the record, and we're ready to take up the story where we left off last week. And we will begin with the 18th verse. You remember the in 2 Samuel, 15 and 19, had the wrong page here. In 15 and 29, I had the wrong page in my Bible. In verse 29, we read that Zadok, therefore, and Abiathar carried the ark of God again to Jerusalem, and they tarried there. That's where these two priests should have been, and waited upon the Lord for deliverance. And David went up by the ascent of Mount Olivet, and he wept as he went up, and had his head covered, and he was barefoot, and all the people that was with him covered there to every man his head. And they went up, weeping as they went up. And one told David, saying, "Ahithophel is among the conspirators of Absalom." And David said, "O Lord, I pray thee, turn the counsel of Ahithophel, this priest who's turned to Absalom, just turn that counsel that he gives into foolishness." It came to pass that when David was come to the top of the mount, where he worshipped God, behold, Hushai, the Archite, came to meet him with his coat rent and earth upon his head. And to whom David said, "If thou passest on with me, then you'll be a burden unto me. But if you return to the city and say unto Absalom, 'I will be thy servant, O king, as I have been thy father's servant hitherto, so will I now also be thy servant,' then thou mayest thou be for me to defeat the counsel of Ahithophel. And hast thou not there with thee Zadok and Abiathar the priests? Therefore it shall be, that what things soever thou shalt hear out of the king's house, you tell it to Zadok and Abiathar the priests. You'll get first-hand information, you deliver it to them, and they'll deliver it to me. Behold, they have there with them their two sons, Ahimaaz Zadok's son, and Jonathan, Abiathar's son, and by them ye shall send unto me everything that you can hear. So Hushai, David's friend, came to the city, and Absalom came into Jerusalem. Now, we read here about a false servant. You remember Mephibosheth, the man who was lame in both of his feet, who was to eat bread at the king's house always. But he has a servant that turns out to be false. So we read that when David was a little past the top of the hill, behold, Ziba, Z-I-B-A, the servant of Mephibosheth, met him with a couple of asses saddled, and upon them 200 loaves of bread, and 100 bunches of raisins, and 100 of summer fruits, and a bottle of wine. And the king said unto Ziba, what meanest thou by these? And Ziba said, the asses be for the king's household to ride on, and the bread and the summer fruit for the young men to eat, and the wine that such as be faint in the wilderness may drink. And the king said, and where is thy master's son? And Ziba said unto the king, behold, he abideth at Jerusalem. For he said, today shalt the house of Israel restore me the kingdom of my father. Now this is a lie. Mephibosheth never said any such thing. But being the son of Saul, he said to declare that today shall the house of Israel restore the kingdom of my father. That's the government of my father to me. I'll be in control. Then said the king to Ziba, behold, thine are all that pertain unto Mephibosheth. And Ziba said, I humbly beseech thee that I may find grace in thy sight, my lord, O king. So when King David came to Bahurim, behold, there thence came out a man of the family, the house of Saul. His name was Shimei, the son of Gera. He came forth, and cursed still as he come. Here he comes toward David, and he comes cursing. He cast stones at David, and all the servants of King David, and all the people and all the mighty men were on his right hand and on his left. And thus said Shimei when he cursed, come out, you bloody man, and thou man of Belial. The Lord hath returned upon thee all the blood of the house of Saul, in whose stead thou hast reigned. And the Lord hath delivered the kingdom into the hand of Absalom thy son. And behold, thou art taken in thy mischief, because thou art a bloody man. Then said Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, unto the king, why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Let me go over, I pray thee, and take off his head. And the king said, what have I to do with you, ye sons of Zeruiah? So let him curse, because the Lord has said unto him, curse David. Who shall then say, wherefore hast thou done so? David knew that these things had been decreed by the Lord because of his great son in the bringing about the death of Uriah, and having committed adultery with Bathsheba, and finally taking her to be his wife. And so he says, he knows this, and he is submissive. David said to Abishai, and to all his servants, behold, my son, which come forth out of my bowels, seeketh my life. How much more now may this Benjamite do it? Let him alone, and let him curse, for the Lord hath bidden him. He realizes that this awful thing is taking place, is actually this man acting as one of the Lord's, shall we say, sheriffs to bring about this punishment. He says, it may be that the Lord will look on mine affliction, and that the Lord will requite me good for his cursing this day. And as David and his men went by the way, Shimei went along on the hillside over against him, and cursed as he went, and threw stones at him, and cast dust. And the king and all the people with him came weary, and they refreshed themselves there. And Absalom and all the people of the men of Israel came to Jerusalem, and Ahithophel was with them. It came to pass when Hushai the Archite, David's friend, was come unto Absalom, that Hushai said unto Absalom, God save the king, God save the king. And Absalom said to Hushai, Is this thy kindness to thy friend? Why wentest thou not with thy friend? Hushai said unto Absalom, Nay, but whom the Lord, and this people, and all the men of Israel choose, his will I be, and with him will I abide. That's all he says. Whomsoever the Lord chooses. If he puts you in the kingship, I'll be faithful to you. If he brings David back to the kingship, I'll be faithful to him. Here is a great example of complete submissiveness, and this is the way that he answered Absalom. Then he says in verse 19, and again, whom should I serve? Should I not serve in the presence of his son? As I have served in thy father's presence, so will I be in thy presence. Then said Absalom to Ahithophel, Give counsel among you what we shall do. And Ahithophel said unto Absalom, Go in unto thy father's concubines, which he hath left to keep the house, and all Israel shall hear that thou art abhorred of thy father. Then shall the hands of all that are with thee be strong. So they spread Absalom a tent upon the top of the house, and Absalom went in unto his father's concubines in the sight of Israel. And the counsel of Ahithophel, which he counseled in those days, was if a man had inquired at the oracle of God. So was all the counsel of Ahithophel, both with David and with Absalom. Moreover, and we will see now what comes out of this, and moreover, Ahithophel said unto Absalom, Let me now choose out 12,000 men, and I will arise and pursue after David this night. I'll come upon him while he is weary and weak-handed, and will make him afraid, and all the people that are with him shall flee. I'll smite the king only, and I'll bring back all the people unto thee. The man whom thou seekest is as if all returned, and all the people shall be in peace. Well, the saying pleased Absalom well. David would be the only one that was slain, and yet all of the people would then turn to him. So this pleased Absalom and all the elders of Israel. Then said Absalom, Call now Hushai, the Archite also. Let us hear likewise what he saith. And when Hushai was come to Absalom, Absalom spake unto him, saying, Ahithophel has spoken after this manner. Shall we do after his saying? If not, speak thou. And Hushai said unto Absalom, The counsel that Ahithophel hath given is not good at this time. For, said Hushai, thou knowest thy father and his men, that they be mighty men, and they be chafed in their minds, a bear robbed of her whelps in the field. And thy father is a man of war, and will not lodge with the people. Behold, he is hid now in some pit, or in some other place, and it will come to pass, when some of them be overthrown at the first, that whosoever heareth it will say, There is a slaughter among the people that follow Absalom. And he also, that is valiant, whose heart is as the heart of a lion, shall utterly melt. For all Israel knows that thy father is a mighty man, and they that be with him are valiant men. Therefore I counsel that all Israel be generally gathered unto thee from Dan even to Beersheba. Thus gather all Israel, as the sand that is by the sea for multitude. That is a phrase that always means uncountable, and that thou go to battle in thine own person. So shall we come upon him in some place where he shall be found, and we will light upon him as the dew falleth on the ground. And of him and of all the men that are with him, there shall not be left so much as one. Moreover, if he be gotten into a city, then shall all Israel bring ropes to that city, and we will draw it into the river, and there be not one small stone found there. The whole city just be wiped out, and everyone in it. And Absalom and all of the men of Israel said, the counsel of Hushai, the Archite, is better than the counsel of Ahithophel. For the Lord has appointed to defeat the good counsel of Ahithophel, to the intent that the Lord might bring evil upon Absalom. Then said Hushai unto Zadok and Abiathar the priests, thus and thus did Ahithophel counsel Absalom, the elders of Israel, and thus I have counseled. Now therefore send quickly, and tell David, saying, lodge not this night in the plains of the wilderness, but speedily pass over, lest the king be swallowed up, and all the people are with him. Now Jonathan and Ahimaaz stay by Enrogel, for they might not be seen to come into the city. And a wench went out and told them, and they went and told King David. This wench would just simply be a girl that worked in the kitchen, a scullery maid, as they would say. Nevertheless, a lad saw them and told Absalom. But they went both of them away quickly and came to a man's house to Bahurim, which had a well in his court, whither they went down. And the woman took and spread a covering over the well's mouth, and spread ground corn thereon, and the thing was not known. And when Absalom's servants came to the woman to the house, they said, where is Ahimaaz and Jonathan? And the woman said unto them, they be gone over the brook of water. And when they had sought and could not find them, they returned to Jerusalem. And it came to pass, after they were departed, that they come up out of the well, and went and told King David, and said unto David, arise, and pass quickly over the water, for thus hath Ahithophel counseled against you. Then David arose, and all the people that were with him. And they passed over Jordan by the morning light. There lacked not one of them that was not gone over Jordan. And when Ahithophel saw that his counsel was not followed, he saddled his ass and arose, and gat him home to his house, to his city. He put his household in order, and hanged himself, and died, and was buried in the sepulchre of his father. He knew what was going to happen. Then David came to Mahanaim, and Absalom passed over Jordan, he and all the men of Israel with him. And Absalom made Amasa captain of the host instead of Joab, which Amasa was a man's son, whose name was Ithra, an Israelite, that went into Abigail, the daughter of Nahash, sister of Zariah, Joab's mother. So Israel and Absalom pitched in the land of Gilead. It came to pass, when David was come to Mahanaim, that Shobai, the son of Nahash, Rabbah, the son of Ammon, and Masher, the son of Ammiel, of Lodabar, and Barzillah, the Gileadite, of Rogelim, they brought beds and basins and earthen vessels and wheat, and barley and flour and parched corn, beans and lentils and parched pulse, and honey and butter and sheep and cheese of kine for David, for the people that were with him to eat, for they said, the people is hungry and weary and thirsty in the wilderness. Now we come to the battle that was fought, called, of course, in history, the Battle of Mount Ephraim. So David numbered the people were with him. He set captains over thousands and captains of hundreds over them. See, he could deal right with the captains of thousands. They could deal with the captains of hundreds. And these could deal with those who were under them. And in verse 2, David sent forth a third part of the people under the hand of Joab, and a third part under the handle of Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, Joab's brother, and a third part under the hand with Ittai the Gittite. And the king said unto the people, I will surely go forth with you, myself also. But the people answered, thou shalt not go forth, for if we flee away, they will not care for us. Neither will half of us die while they care for us. But now thou art worth 10,000 of us. Therefore now it is better that thou succor us out of the city. And the king said unto them, what seemeth you best I will do. And the king stood by the gate side, and all the people came out by hundreds and by thousands. And the king commanded Joab and Abishai and Ittai, saying, deal gently for my sake with the young man, even with Absalom. He wants him to go easy on him. It's the love of a father for his son, and even though that God's hand is in all this. And all the people heard when the king gave all the captains charge concerning Absalom. David could give it to captains. The captains should give it to rulers over hundreds. That you are to go easy on Absalom and see that no harm comes to him. So the people went out into the field against Israel, and the battle was in the wood of Ephraim, where the people of Israel were slain before the servants of David, and there was a great slaughter that day of 20,000 men. For the battle was there scattered over all the country, and the wood devoured more people that day than the sword devoured. Meaning, of course, that they were simply trapped in places that they could not get out, and that the wood itself made it impossible for them to become fighters. Now, in verse 9, that's the 18th chapter, verse 9. Absalom met the servants of David, and Absalom rode upon a mule. And the mule went under the thick boughs of a great oak, and his head caught hold of the oak, and he was taken up between the heaven and earth, and the mule was under him went away. Now, very simple, anyone at all familiar with wilderness trees, the way in which they grow, it would be a very simple thing to see the limbs fork out in a narrow fork. I wouldn't have to take you very far to show you such a thing. And we could soon pick it out. I used to almost study the limbs of trees when I was a boy. We often look for such young forks for our slingshots. And there's many a man, I remember making a slingshot out of the narrow fork of a young tree. But as this tree grew out, of course, the limbs became stronger. And, of course, no one pruning these trees or cutting these trees, the limbs could be very low to the ground. And a horseman riding along, not seeing what was ahead, could be have his head cut in the fork of the tree, and be pulled right off of the horse, and the horse go on, and he be left hanging there behind, maybe with a broken neck. So, let's not try to make too much of this. Let's just take it. It says that his head caught hold of the oak. He was taken up between heaven and earth. The mule that was under him went away. Now, verse 10. A certain man saw it and told Joab, and said, behold, I saw Absalom hanged in an oak. And Joab said unto the man that told him, and behold, thou sawest him. Well, why didst thou not smite him there to the ground? I would have given thee 10 shekels of silver and a girdle. And the man said unto Joab, though I should receive 1,000 shekels of silver in mine hand, yet would I not put forth mine hand against the king's son. For in our hearing the king charged thee, and Abishai, and Ittai, saying, beware that none touch the young man Absalom. Otherwise I should have wrought falsehood against mine own life. For there is no matter hid from the king, and thou thyself would have set yourself against me. Then said Joab, I may not tarry with thee. And he took 3 darts in his hand and thrust them through the heart of Absalom while he was yet alive in the midst of the oak. And 10 young men that bare Joab's armor compassed about and smote Absalom and slew him. And Joab blew the trumpet, and the people returned from pursuing after Israel, for Joab held back the people. And they took Absalom and cast him into a great pit in the wood, and laid a very great heap of stones upon him. And all Israel fled, every one to his tent. As we'd say, everyone went back home. And Absalom in his lifetime had taken and reared up for himself a pillar which is in the king's dale. For he said, I have no son to keep my name in remembrance. And he called the pillar after his own name, and it is called unto this day Absalom's place. Now David is to hear about the death of his beloved son. Then said Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok, let me now run and bear the king tidings, how that the Lord has avenged him of his enemies. And Joab said unto him, thou shalt not bear tidings this day, but thou shalt bear tidings another day. But this day thou shalt bear no tidings, because the king's son is dead. Then said Joab to Cushai, go tell the king what thou hast seen. And Cushai bowed himself unto Joab and ran. Then said Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok, yet again to Joab, But howsoever let me, I pray thee, also run after Cushai. And Joab said, wherefore wilt thou run, my son, seeing that thou hast no tidings ready? But howsoever, said he, let me run. And he said unto him, run, that the truth might be established, as in the mouth of true witnesses. And Ahimaaz ran by the way of the plain, and he overran Cushai. And David sat between the two gates, and the watchman went up the roof over the gate and the wall. He lifted up his eyes, that meant he looked out at a distance, and looked, and behold, a man running alone. The watchman cried and told the king, and the king said, if he be alone, there is tidings in his mouth. And he came apace and drew near. And the watchman saw another man running. And the watchman called unto the porter, I believe this would be the gatekeeper, and said, behold, another man running alone. And the king said, he also bringeth tidings. And the watchman said, methinketh the running of the foremost is like the running of Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok. He could almost tell by the way that he was. We can tell a man by his walk, even by his footsteps. Well enough acquainted with this man to say that this seems to be Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok. And the king said, he's a good man. He cometh with good tidings. And Ahimaaz called, said unto the king, all is well. And he fell down the earth, and his face before the king. And he said, blessed be the Lord thy God, which hath delivered up the men that lifted up their hand against my lord the king. And the king said, is the young man Absalom safe? And Ahimaaz answered, when Joab sent the king's servants, and me, thy servant, I saw a great tumult, and I knew not what it was. And the king said unto him, turn aside and stand there. And he turned aside and stood still. And behold, Cushai came and said, tidings, my lord, the king, for the Lord hath avenged thee this day, and all them that rose up against thee. And the king said, unto Cushai, is the young man Absalom safe? And Cushai answered, said, the enemies of my lord the king, and all that rise against thee to do thee hurt, be as that young man is. And the king was much moved, and went up to the chamber over the gate, and wept. And as he went, thus he said, O my son Absalom, my son Absalom, would God I had died for thee. O Absalom, my son, my son. Let us continue. Chapter 19, verse 1. And it was told Joab, behold, the king weepeth and mourneth for Absalom. And the victory that day was turned into mourning unto all the people. For the people heard say that day how the king was grieved for his son. And the people gat them by stealth that day into the city, as people being ashamed steal away when they flee in battle. But the king covered his face, and the king cried with a loud voice, O my son Absalom, Oh, Absalom, my son, my son. And Joab came to the house to the king and said, Thou hast shamed this day the faces of all thy servants, which this day have saved your life, and the lives of your sons and your daughters, the lives of your wives, and the lives of your concubines, in that thou lovest thine enemies and hatest thy friends. For thou hast declared this day that thou regardest neither princes nor servants. For this day I perceive that if Absalom had lived, and we had all died this day, it had pleased thee well. Now therefore arise, go forth, and speak comfortably unto thy servants. For I swear by the Lord, if thou goest not forth, there will not tarry one with thee this night. And that will be worse unto thee than all evil that befell thee from thy youth until now. And Joab seems to be speaking good words. Then the king arose, and he sat in the gate. And they told unto all the people, saying, Behold, the king doth sit in the gate. And all the people came before the king. For before this, the people had fled every man to his tent. And the result was, out of all of this, had come really just civil war. For in verse 9 we read that all the people were strife throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, The king saved us out of the hand of our enemies. He delivered us out of the hand of Philistines. And now he has fled out of the land for Absalom. That's what the people are saying. And Absalom, whom we anointed over us, is dead in battle. Now therefore, why speak ye not a word of bringing back the king? Bringing the king back. Why speak ye not a word of the return, the rightful return of King David? And David sent to Zadok and to Abiathar of the priest, saying, Speak unto the elders of Judah, saying, Why are ye the last to bring the king back to his house, seeing the speech of all Israel has come to the king, even to his house? Hear, my brethren, hear, my bones and my flesh, wherefore then are ye the last to bring back the king? These passages have been used to set forth the truth of the second coming, as if the Lord was in the miserable condition that David is in, and we ought to bring him back to earth and make him happy. Well, they don't know what they're talking about. But I'll go on with this in the next study, make a review of this, and go on the next study. And so until that time, my time is up. I'll bid you goodbye. It's been my joy to teach you. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.